host, Benjamin Levesse, and for the next hour, I'd like to invite you to grab your cup of coffee, tea, or Diet Dr. Pepper, if that's your beverage of choice, and settle in for the 8th episode of Fiber Hooligan. For those of you who are wondering who the heck I am the CEO of XRX Inc., home of Knitters Magazine, XRX Books, and Stitches Expos, and I'm broadcasting live from our offices here in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. Before I welcome my guest today, I'd like to thank my friend Tammy Burke for going ahead and starting a Ravelry group for Fiber Hooligan. It's called Fiber Hooligans. I have to be honest, I was completely unmotivated to do so. And now that it's there, I find myself checking in on it at least once or twice a day and participating in the discussion. So I guess I do have to be kind of drugged into these things. And my thanks go to you, Tammy, for not letting me leave this alone. All right. Let's get to today's guest. My guest today is one of the most beautiful souls I've ever met. Although not primarily a designer, her designs have appeared in Nitty, Twist Collective, Blue Moon Fiber Arts, and on Ravelry.com. She is an award-winning image consultant, certified color designer, and yoga instructor. She is one of the owners of Pearlescence Yarns, a local yarn store in Sunnyvale, California. I've said it before, and I'll say it again. Everyone who meets her falls in love with her. I'm speaking of my dear friend, Nathaniel Apple, who joins us this morning from her shop in Sunnyvale, California. Good morning, Nathaniel, and welcome to the show.
Good morning, Benjamin. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, it's great. It's too long between visits.
It really is.
You know, it's, you know, one February a year is just, you know, it's not even the full February. We just, you know, we get like a weekend.
It seems like a lifetime since Stitches, and Stitches itself this year was epic. We had so much fun.
Epic. I like that, epic. Yeah, well, it was. Well, we'll talk about, you know, fashion show garment drama a little later, but, I have missed you and the crew, and how is the Pearlescence gang?
Oh, they're doing fantastic. In fact, a bunch of us got together yesterday and had a sewing day over at Sandy and Kay's house. Sandy and Kay are my business partners. And a bunch of the folks that came to hang out with us, we've got a great volunteer staff for Stitches, Kathy and Pamela and our friend Ruth and Sandy and Kay's daughter Ruth. We all got together to do some sewing because we're polycrafters, and we figured it would be a great way to get things done if we had everybody in the same room so we could bounce ideas off each other, have someone to help you measure. And we spend a lot of time together even outside of the shop. They've really become a big part of our local community and really part of our family.
Well, I know your whole crew. I mean, you guys live in each other's lives and then work together. It sounds, if I wasn't in small business, I would think that sounds crazy, but I do know how it happens. You know, you're just one big happy family over there.
Well, we are. And in fact, I live next door to Sandy and Kay. We spend so much time together. It's remarkable.
Oh, I actually have heard you guys finish each other's sentences.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah,
we do.
Which I don't know if it's a good thing or a bad thing, you know, because, you know, you've got a bit of a devil in you. So I had hope for them.
It's one of the pieces of synergy that makes it work as a small business, because we shortcut things, which is not a bad thing. And when you get into a creative vibe with people, that often happens, because there's this sort of zeitgeist that occurs when you have all of this input coming in from different places and everybody's synthesizing it all into one thing. It's a beautiful and wonderful thing.
Glad you could see it in the creativity. But I wanted to talk also about your kids. I know that you've got one ready for school and that she's going to school a long way from you. This weekend we took our daughter over to Augustana College so she could register for classes. We're lucky that she's here in town. In fact, she's planning on living at home while she goes to school, but that's not the case for your daughter. Your daughter's going far away.
She is. Yeah, I have three daughters. My eldest is 17 and about to graduate from high school. She's headed off to West Virginia to an equestrian school. She loves horses. She's been riding since she was a little bit under 5 years old. We actually fudged it a little bit the first time we took her riding. And there is
really
nothing
you
she
broke
wants
the
to
rule,
more.
Nathaniel?
I am a little bit of a rule breaker, a little bit
really?
Of a rebel. It's true. You'd never guess to look at me, would you?
No, not at all. Not at all. So your daughter's been is being accepted to this school. And You guys are pretty close. That's going to be a long way for her to be away from you.
Oh, thank goodness for Skype and FaceTime. Otherwise, I don't think we'd survive. But the technology has gotten us to the point where I could talk to her live and see her face every day if I need to, or if she needs to.
So, and you do.
Absolutely. It's going to be a difficult transition, and I think it will be hard on her sisters as well. I've got a 15-year-old who is a freshman in high school, and then my little Ellie, who just turned 5, is going to start kindergarten in the fall. So I've got 2 major milestones all stacked up right on top of the other.
I can't believe Ellie's 5 already.
I know. She's my little fiber arts baby.
People
in the fiber arts world have known her since she was born.
Well, I remember her when she was a baby. Actually, I was thinking about that. I was thinking this weekend as I was preparing for the show that, you know, you and I have known each other for about 7 years. I took over the company 7 years ago, and you've been doing Stitches longer than that. But you and I really didn't become good friends until 2009. And do you remember that?
Oh, I sure do.
And,
who could
you,
forget the first ever Sock Summit? I mean, that was
the first ever.
That was
groundbreaking. Yep. So
yeah, we packed up a van and hauled half the shop up to Portland, and you know, kids and the whole shebang. And Ellie was trotting around, and I remember she was sitting on Tina Newton's lap in the big center area at the table eating yogurt while I was busy working.
Yeah,
and you were there with Sandy Rosner.
I was.
SRX.
Yeah. Yep.
And there was this guy who kept showing up at our booth. We're like,
I know.
Hey, I think I know you from Stitches, right?
Yeah. So you and I started joking around, and you gave me a present at the end of the show. Do you remember what you gave me?
I do. It was a card from Itty Bitty Nitty Witties. And it said, "Does this knitting make me look like a Republican?" I couldn't think of a more perfect card for you.
I still have it.
You do? That's so sweet.
I do. It was very sweet. And since then when I see you and I come out to the show, usually you kidnap me and take me for coffee or somewhere before the Stitches shows actually start.
Yes, every opportunity I get.
That's one of the great
things about this industry is that we form such deep, honest friendships. You know, really, I look around in the needle arts world, and I've known people in this industry for over a decade now. And I count many of those people among my very closest friends. You included.
Yeah, I know you. Well, thank you, hon. I appreciate that. But yeah, I know that. So you talked about the last decade. Let's start right in. Let's start out and give our listeners a little background and history about you. You weren't always in the fiber arts world. Let's talk about how you made the transition to what you were doing before into the fiber arts world and give them a little history about you.
Sure. Well, I actually started out in the publishing industry. I worked for a publishing company that did technology directories for the embedded systems industry. I live here in Silicon Valley, and, you know, everywhere you look, you chuck a stone and there's a tech company. And so I worked for them doing web design and digital publishing and some inside ad sales. And then I moved on and started working as an image consultant. So I used to do people's color palettes and help them with makeup and wardrobing, personal shopping. And in 2004, I sort of was looking for a new direction. I'd been studying all kinds of things, studying psychology, studying the Enneagram, studying spirituality, and I just wasn't sure that I was in the right place. I didn't feel like I had really found my avocation. And I was working for a real estate company doing some basic office work, and it just wasn't doing it for me. And I was feeling restless. I spent half my time on the internet, writing on my knitting blog and chatting with my knitting friends. And one day I looked up and threw my hands in the air and I said, "Okay, universe, I need to do something different. show me something new. And that very day, a knitting friend forwarded on a Craigslist ad from someone who was looking for a consultant to open up a yarn shop. And I figured, well, I have technical skills. I learned to knit when I was a child. My grandmother taught me when I was about 8 years old. I started knitting in earnest when I lived in Norway as an exchange student. And so I had a really good handle on some of the more technical aspects of knitting, cables and lace and color work. And I thought, well, you know, that might be something I could do. So I called him up and we had an interview and we hit it right off. In fact, we went straight from that interview to go to other yarn shops. We drove up to San Francisco and did a little yarn shop tour and decided that, hey, we thought we could do this. And so I helped open up a yarn shop called Community that was in San Jose. And I worked for them for a couple years before deciding to go out on my own. And then Sandy and I looked at each other one day and we said, you know, I think we want to do this ourselves. Is that completely crazy? And the answer was yes. It was completely crazy. And we went from that point, from the night that we sat in the pub and drew things on placemats, to opening our shop in 6 weeks.
6 weeks to open a shop.
Yeah, it was pretty nuts. But I had the industry contacts, and I happened to know that my favorite quilt shop was closing down and that that space might be available. And everything just click, 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 fell into place. It was like the universe just shouted, yes, go do this. And I've been doing it ever since, and I can't imagine a better job.
Well, I think, well, you're a natural at it. I've seen you in your booth. I've seen you online, and, of course, I've seen you with your customers. Let's talk about your shop for a minute. I think the first thing that people should know is that you don't consider yourself, your shop, a knitting store, do you?
No, not at all.
And
we are a community center that deals in yarn.
A community center that deals in yarn. And, you know, just so we get a background for our listeners, what do you carry in your store for yarns, and what do you carry, what else do you carry in your store?
So we have about half of our square footage is devoted to yarn. And we carry some of the big names. Cascade Yarns is probably the biggest selection that we have, and they have been so wonderful to work with. And we work with them at Stitches as well. We also carry Classic Elite and Crystal Palace and Collage and Fiesta, Manos del Uruguay, which is one of our favorites because it's a fair trade company, Frog Tree Yarns, which is another fair trade, a lot of beautiful hand-painted stuff like Dreaming Color Yarns and Colinette, Shibui, Blue Heron. I could just go on and on. Oh, the beautiful stuff from Fiesta. We're just really, we try to bring in a good mix of colors and textures so that our customers have lots of creative choices. So that's the knitting and crocheting side of it. But we also carry a lot of spinning fiber. We carry spinning wheels. We carry looms, both floor looms and rigid heddle looms. The spinning and weaving is a big part of our business. And then we also carry needle felting supplies. We've got some voracious needle felters around here. So we carry lots of fibers that we sell by the ounce, which is really lovely. So we've got a pretty broad selection of things, and we try to be a one-stop shop for the fiber art stuff.
You know, a minute ago, one of the comments that you made was that that there's the yarn, and then as you transition to what the other things were saying, you were saying that, so that's the knitting and crochet side of it. And you, I noticed that you made the point of saying and crochet. So I want to talk to you about crochet because I'm a firm believer in crochet. I have heard a great many yarn store owners that just really don't do any crochet sales or support. And I've been given a number of reasons why, and maybe you can give me some reasons why you pay attention to that. You know, and I also know that you had some anecdotal experience with this as well.
Absolutely. Well, I think crochet has been really underserved in the fiber arts community. There is a mistaken idea that crochet is clunky, and it doesn't have to be. I've seen beautiful diaphanous crochet, and it's fun to do. Crochet, you do one stitch at a time, which means that if you have a mistake, you can correct it immediately, which is wonderful. It took me a little while because I'm a left-handed crocheter, and so I move in the left-handed direction, which means that I basically have to reverse everything that I do. So it took me a little while to work my brain around that. But in the last couple of years, I've really taken that on board, especially since my shoulder surgery, because I couldn't knit for very long. And I found that I could crochet for much longer. So I've been crocheting sweaters and doilies. Oh, my God, I'm so in love with doily patterns. I can't get enough doily patterns. I want to take doily patterns and design shawls and design sweaters and all kinds of things out of them. So I find it really inspiring because the stitches have a different feel. They have a different weight to them. And I'm seeing some really creative crochet out there. You know, I look at the stuff that Doris Chan is doing. I look at the stuff that Lily Go, if you haven't checked out Lily Go's stuff on Ravelry, run, do not walk. Beautiful feminine sweaters and gorgeous shawls and all kinds of wonderful stuff. And I think there's also a mistaken identity about who crocheters are. You know, I hear people say things like, only grandmothers crochet. That is not my experience at all. We have a whole bunch of young crocheters here who are young and hip and who want things that fit and that look modern and appealing and that have shape. So there's some really great things going on now in the crochet industry because designers are starting to take more note. And they're creating patterns that fit the way that people think knitting should fit, that have shape to them and aren't just boxy and aren't just chunky. So there's great stuff going on there. And I get people who come in and they're like, well, is it okay to bring my crochet here? And we say, yes, please, come in and sit with us and work on your stuff and show us and inspire us and teach us too. I had one customer come in, and she was so disheartened, and she was so sheepish and shy because she'd been to another local yarn store, and I honestly don't know which store it was, and it doesn't really matter to me. But they told her that she couldn't crochet with any of the yarns in their shop, and my heart just broke because here was someone who was coming in with such a sincere desire to create something and being told that she couldn't, being told that she wasn't good enough. And that, to me, is an absolute travesty. Anyone who wants to create should create. They should be given the tools to do so. So why would I try to limit somebody's creativity by saying, no, we don't do crochet here? Absolutely we do.
Oh, but that's a great answer. I'm glad that you look at it like that. I had Drew on a couple episodes ago, and we joked that, okay, so Drew, you've got, you know, your new yarn, but you can only crochet with it. I mean, the idea that you can only crochet or knit with a certain yarn. I mean, I think you and I would agree that there are certain fibers that don't lend themselves maybe to being used as warp on a loom. But there's darn few things that you can't do multiple things with. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, obviously, form has to follow function. But beyond that, the sky's the limit. And that's one of the things that I think is so exciting about fiber arts. Every single person who engages in these creative pursuits is an artist. Because they're making creative decisions about what color to use, what texture to use, altering things to patterns. There are so many creative possibilities, and when you can look at a pattern and see the bones and then make choices to make it completely your own, you're making art. You absolutely are. Every single one of us that picks up sticks and strings is an artist.
I like that as an answer. Let's move on for a second about the nature of running a local yarn store. So I struggle with this all the time. I have friends that struggle with this all the time. We all do a ton of things. We all are in small businesses one way or the other. Some of us have less and or more people, but we wear many hats. But when you step back and ask yourself, okay, what is my job exactly? I guess the first question is, what is it that you feel is your job? And the second part of that is, do you feel like you get around to doing what it is that you understand is your job?
My job is to help guide people through that creative process. And along the way, I get to connect with them on a deep level, which is wonderful. And when you're talking creativity, there's a certain amount of vulnerability that comes up for folks. They don't want to make mistakes. They want some guidance. And that's what we provide, both in walking around and looking for the right materials for their project, and also as they sit down in our family room and work on it. You know, we help them learn how to fix their own mistakes.
Okay. And so you call that... No, go, please. Go ahead.
The understanding that we have of yarn is one of those things that takes a while to build. You know, and people jokingly call us yarn whisperers. I prefer to think of myself as a knitting architect because I look at knitting in its structure. And so I can pick up someone's knitting even though I don't know the pattern and I can fix their mistake. That's something that is my specialized training that I bring after years and years and years of doing this as a craft. And there's also a magic in interacting with people, in recognizing when the person on the other side is asking for more than just help with their yarn. And that's part of the magic of this as a community space, because we see people through all kinds of events in their lives. I've had customers show up straight from the doctor's office to tell me that they're finally pregnant. I have had other people who walk in the door and collapse in my arms because they've just lost a loved one. We see best friendships form. We see communities getting built. We see all kinds of connections being made across all kinds of lines. I want everyone who walks in the door to feel welcome. And that's a big part of my job. So yeah, helping people with their knitting and their crocheting and their spinning and their weaving is all an important part, but helping people is the biggest part.
I think it's the right on answer. I mean, you always say things like, and this is really one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show. You have a philosophy of customer service that really is a way of treating people as a community rather than a clientele. You talk about the family, you talk about the family room, which is your center area that people knit in, and a safe place where people can come. And it turns out that, you know, your shop is not just a hangout, it's a destination and a part of your customers, your friends, really, their routine. They go there when on their day off, they go to your shop, just sit, knit, crochet, do whatever. You know, how do you go about creating an atmosphere like that?
Well, the first and foremost thing is that it has to be a safe space. So we have a very simple rule, and that is be nice. And we always say that when someone new walks into the store and we introduce ourselves and we say, hey, this is our shop, this is our family room, anytime the shop is open, you're welcome to come hang out here and meet people. They're all very nice. And I turn and I nod my head at the people in the room and I say, aren't they? But we are very, very careful in that family room space to make sure that there's no bashing going on. There's no crochet bashing. There's no knitting bashing. There's no political bashing. We try to keep the conversation very personable and very light so that everyone feels welcome. And if a subject starts to get a little heated, we try and cool it down a little bit so that everybody feels safe and included. And we're very, very fortunate that we have a group of diehard regulars that show up every Thursday night without fail, for certain, because Thursday night is the night that we're open late and lots of people show up to work on their projects. They bring their spinning wheels. Some of them even bring their looms in. And they help to build that community, because when we say, hey, this new person just walked in, they say, come on over, sit down next to me. We're going to go get dinner. Do you want to come with us? They're all very inclusive. And that has to start with us, because Sandy Kay and I set the tone for what's going to happen in that family room. And because we keep it safe and we keep it nice, everybody else plays by the rules. And it's a wonderful thing.
It is. I've been in, and the vibe in your shop is amazing. Everybody feels like it's perfectly okay to sit down to somebody they've never met and just start talking to them. It's wonderful.
Well, and the wonderful thing about the fiber arts community is that because you've got this focal point, the stuff that's in your hands, it becomes a really non-confrontational way to make a connection. Think about it. When you see someone out there knitting or crocheting in public, you want to know what they're working on, don't you? And so
yeah,
it's kind of a no-risk thing to say, hey, what you making? And the number of times that I have had that experience where you ask a simple question like that and it turns into a real conversation is just remarkable. It gives people a way to start a conversation and then just see where it leads. And, you know, sometimes it is just, you know, a shawl. And you can tell if a person isn't interested in interacting that way. But my experience is that most fiber artists can't wait to tell you what they're working on.
That has been my experience as well. You know, I love the very optimistic and lighthearted way that you approach every day. I can tell you're having fun. And that, I want to bring that into specific relief with another comment. I talk to a lot of yarn shops and yarn shop owners out in the world, and right now, you know, the economy has not been the best it's ever been, and I hear a lot of gloom and doom talk that they feel that the market is just too hard, way too hard, and that it's almost impossible to make it in this company, that there's no way through, that there's really no optimism left, that the age of the local yarn store, you know, that it just totally needs to change, or there is no future for the local yarn store. What do you say about that?
Well, it's certainly not my experience. I mean, we're actually seeing our numbers grow, which I think has to do with the fact that we are so community-oriented. It also has to do with the fact that we take this very seriously as a business. So when you go into the fiber arts as a business, it's not just that you're taking your hobby and now you're going to make some money with it. There's way more to it than that. So we're looking at trends. We look through fashion magazines. We look through Pantone profiles so that we know what colors are coming up. We look at what's going on in television and movies to see where inspiration might be coming from. We stay on top of those things. We spend a lot of time doing, okay, I'm going to call it research.
Watching movies.
Well, there's that, but there's also things like Ravelry. So I'm looking at what's going on the yarn websites. I'm looking at what's going on Ravelry. What's hitting the what's hot page? What are crafters looking for? So that we can sort of guide our product line to meet that. In addition, we're watching the craft cycle definitely hits certain highlights along the way. And we're really seeing spinning and weaving coming to the fore. And we were ready for that. So we've got the equipment. And not only do we have the equipment, we have the education to back it up. So it isn't just that someone is interested in a spinning wheel, so we send them a spinning wheel and then we send them on their way. we have programs set up so that they can take ongoing education so they can continue to build their skills. When you build your clientele's skills, you build in customer loyalty, and you keep them coming back because they're always looking for that next challenge. You have to keep that customer retention rate up. And here, you know, that's the businessy side of things. What do you do that keeps them coming back for more? Building that community is part of that customer retention. And that's very deliberate from both sides of the coin, both because we're trying to build that as community and we're building sustainability for our business as well.
Well, you know that I'm, of course, a big proponent in education. I mean, you've seen the classes at Stitches. And I know that your classes are wildly popular. You were teaching a class the other day, and I think your shop filled up, didn't it?
Oh, yeah. We our spinning classes in particular are just out of control. We run a 12-week spinning intensive called Spin U, Spin University, and it is a full 12-week comprehensive spinning course. So it's for intermediate spinners who are looking to refine their technique and to be able to control and design their own yarns. And that class, which we've been running for several years now, every single session sells out. We just finished one up and started a new one. The one that's going to start in the end of summer is already, I think, almost filled to capacity. I may have one or two spots left. And our weaving classes are starting to move in that direction too. So we're starting to offer more extended weaving classes. So I have a beginning rigid heddle class that's a six-week class. I'll have a shafted loom class in the autumn that will be a six-week class to just get people introduced to the topic.
And I know that you've been moving in this direction for a while. I think one of the things you said a few minutes ago is worth kind of repeating, which is when you have customers with better skill sets, they're just more confident fiber artists. And more confident
Absolutely.
Fiber artists, they'll spend a little extra money on better yarns because, you know, their skills are good enough that they're good enough to be doing that.
Sure. A big part of education is teaching your customer how to discern.
Yeah.
So we all have that bag of yarn somewhere back in the corner of our stash that's the stuff that we started out with. And you know the kind of stuff that I'm talking about. That's the the icky acrylic or the fun fur or the garish color. Because when you first start out, you don't know what you don't know. Over time, as you become more facile with the technique, your needs start to change. And now, instead of just going down to the local big box store, you want to go to a boutique yarn store because you know that you're going to find that perfect skein of hand-painted yarn, or you're going to find the perfect worsted weight for that cardigan that you know you need for the office. And your choices become more refined. That's where I'm trying to get our customers to the point where it isn't just that, oh, that's pretty and I want that. I want them to actually use what they're stashing and have those be good functional choices for their life.
I think you're absolutely right on it. I think that one of the things you said a few minutes ago when you were talking about quote-unquote research Ravelry, something that I wanted to talk to you about. I was in a local yarn store last year, and the owner of that store told me that places like, quote-unquote, places like Ravelry were hurting her business, and how could she sell patterns if customers get all their patterns online, and it devalued regular brands, and, you know, it was just not, that Ravelry itself was not a healthy thing for the traditional reseller market. And I'd like to get your response to that.
Ravelry is, for me, one of the best things that has ever happened to local yarn stores. I use Ravelry every single day. Yes, I do research and I inspire myself more than perhaps I should. I have quite a queue of planned projects and a library full of gorgeous things because I just can't resist them. It helps to be a junkie in your own industry. But it's an incredibly powerful database at the very heart of it, because Casey has very intelligently designed that so that if I have a customer who comes in and they're looking for, let's say, a vest pattern, I can refine that search from the very top level and say, okay, I'm looking for a vest, I'm looking for worsted weight yarn, I have this much yardage, it has to have these features, and boom, I have a set of patterns there available for me, which is completely awesome. If a customer comes in with a pattern, let's say they walk in with a Mary Maxim pattern from the 70s, and they want to try and match up a yarn for that, well, I can go and look through the yarn database, find the yarn that's specified in the pattern, and find a modern equivalent. That's a really powerful tool for me. It means that I have information at my fingertips, and information is what my customers come to me for. They're looking for that kind of information because they don't have an idea of where do I go from here. In addition to that, recently they have added a feature on Ravelry where local yarn stores can sell Ravelry patterns. So if a customer comes in and we look through the Ravelry database and they find a pattern that they want, if the designer has allowed that, they can purchase that pattern from me. I can deliver it directly to their Ravelry library or send a PDF to their email, or I can print it right there in my shop. It's right there at my fingertips. It's an absolutely wonderful, wonderful resource. And then there's, of course, the social component. You know, we have a Ravelry group for the shop, and it's a good way to keep track of what's going on in other worlds and join a knit along and all kinds of wonderful things.
I couldn't agree with you more. But since we're on the subject of the social aspect, let's talk about your social media presence, because you and the store do a lot of social media. You know, there are people that think it's not important, that it's a time suck, and I don't agree. I know you don't agree. And so rather than asking you why you don't agree, because it's such an obvious question, I'd like to ask you to tell us the why of what you are doing and then tell us the how that's you've done it in the way that's made you successful and you're able to take advantage of it.
The why is really simple. Customers want information and they want it in short chunks. People's attention spans, much shorter now. And so having the little soundbite or the little tweet that they can read in less than 30 seconds is way more approachable for them than reading a long blog post, for example. And one of the things that we found as things like Twitter and Facebook started to pick up speed was that more and more of our customers were adopting that model. And it really began to make sense to us because we can snapshot things. So a box comes in from our lovely UPS man, Jean-Marie. He's our favorite guy because it's like Christmas every single day. We open that box and boom, we take a picture and onto Twitter it goes, and it goes out to all of our customers, and we have people show up that same afternoon. Where is it? Because they want to see what's new. It's a way of reaching people very, very quickly and across broad distances too. So just like I want to see what's coming new from Fiesta Yarns or from Cascade Yarns because they've got very active presences on Facebook and Twitter, my customers too, they want to see what's new in the shop. They want to know what people are working on because that's inspiring to them. And for people who can't make it into the brick and mortar, it's a way to keep them involved as well, to keep them feeling like part of the community that broader community that is really important. And then when they come to town, they're like, hey, this is such and so. I follow you on Twitter. Did you see my reply? And so we use Twitter and Facebook primarily as our social media outlets. And they've made it really easy because I can use my iPhone, take a picture of that box of yarn that I just opened, and it's online instantly. Really easy. It doesn't take as long as sitting down and composing a whole blog post, and it actually helps me be a little concise because I can be a bit wordy.
I like that about you.
I'm the daughter of an English teacher. I can't help it. I see that there's a question in the chat room, Benjamin.
There is, actually. Can we go back to it?
Question was, I think that's an important thing to address.
Yeah, we were talking about that you charge your customers for the information and education. Some local yarn stores are adopting that model. So I think the question that, and I want to make sure that I get this, is that if they're sitting around in a circle, that's not kind of a charge thing, but you do have a formalized education program.
We sure do. And the way that that works for us is that any information that they can get on the internet is free. I'm not going to charge somebody for using Ravelry in my store. I'll charge them if they, you know, if they make the purchase of the pattern, absolutely. And in terms of giving people help, we don't discriminate between what people buy in somebody else's store and what they buy in my store. I do not require monogamy to my yarn store. I go shop at other people's yarn stores because I can't carry everything. And there's, you know, anytime I'm out and about and I run into a yarn store, of course I have to go in. And every time I go into a yarn store, I have to buy something. Of course I do. However, we have a policy that if the help that a person needs is going to require more than 5 or 10 minutes of time, that they schedule a private lesson, which ensures that they get our undivided attention. And it also protects us from getting sort of sucked into a bigger bit of time when we haven't scheduled it that way. It helps us make sure that we've got appropriate coverage on the floor to make sure that other customers are getting the service that they need. And so it works out pretty well.
Well, I think that's great. And I'm glad to hear that you're not one of those people that, because I've seen this in yarn stores, that a customer walks in, maybe they're driving across America and they're just visiting every yarn store and they're working on something, and the yarn store owner or manager immediately confronts them and says, did you buy that for me? Oh, well, then I can't help you, you know, that there's a real turnoff right away.
Here's the other thing about that, Benjamin. When a customer walks in my door, I don't know what their circumstances are. And I have had customers come in who require assistance, but they really can't afford boutique yarn shop prices. If I turn that customer away and say, no, I won't help you, she won't come back when she has the money to spend. She'll go somewhere else. Every interaction that we have is an investment in a future customer. So if I take a minute and I say, sure, let me help you with that, when she can't afford to come and spend a little money, guess where she's going to show up? And I'll welcome her into the shop. Because that's what building a community means. Yes, it's important to me to sell yarn. It's important to me to sell needles and crochet hooks. Absolutely it is. But more important to me, I want to build lifelong customers.
Well, you and I have had the conversation a long time ago, and I know you come to it from the right place. It just also happens to be smart business. It is, we think, 6 times more expensive to replace a customer than to retain a customer, right?
Yep, absolutely.
But beyond that, it's just not the right thing to do. And I know that
this is an industry where we have the opportunity to be compassionate. It's something that people expect goes hand in hand. And it doesn't always, and that makes me sad.
Well, let's not be sad. Let's talk about something happy. Let's talk about your stash. as you admitted, you're an addict in your own world. And I know that just even thinking about your stash makes you happy. So we're going to make you happy here. I happen to know that you have yarn in your stash that you will probably never use, that you take it out every so often and just pet it. I don't know that you've named it, but I know that it has a special shelf for itself.
It's actually an entire bin.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm very, very fortunate in that the house I live in, it's a 1920s California bungalow, and it's got a separate garage where I have my studio. And we built it all out with office cubicles so that I have places for my sewing machine and my serger and my paper crafts, and both of my big looms live out there. I have two shacked looms. I've got a cherry wolf pup and a 46-inch cherry jack loom that live out there, and all of my stash, with the exception of my spinning fiber, is out there. Some of it has special boxes, so I have these great big Reisenthal fabric totes, and most everything is divided out into categories. One of those big Reisenthal totes is full of Rowan DK Soft, which is sadly
they don't make that
discontinued.
Yeah.
Oh, it just breaks my heart. It was the best yarn ever. It was around in the late 90s, early 2000s, and it is just so soft and so squishy and so wonderful. And I knit one sweater out of it, a beautiful horseshoe lace cardigan, which I love. And I loved it so much that I bought up every single bit of it that I could find on eBay. And so every once in a while, I'll pull it out and separate out the colors, and I'll pet them and love them and call them George, and then they go back because there will never be any more of it.
So you're like the wine collector that collects the wine with never, ever any intention of drinking it. You're just going to pet these, aren't you?
Yeah, I think that might be the case. It's really, really, really special. And I'm also a souvenir yarn collector. So every time I'm out traveling, I go to a yarn shop and I pick up a little bit of something. And I'm very lucky because my husband totally gets it. In fact, there was one year we were driving up to Oregon to go to his cousin's wedding, and I got a speeding ticket. You know, they look for California license plates up there. And I was so upset. I hadn't had a speeding ticket since I was in high school, and I was just beside myself. There went my perfect driving record, and I was tired because we'd been driving all night. And Kevin looked at me, and he said, "You know what we need? We need a yarn store." So he got out his phone, and he found me a yarn store, and we drove straight to it, and I went and petted yarn, and it was all better.
Well, okay. So now all of my listeners that have husbands, you know, Kevin has now just set the bar so darn high that, you know, the husbands are going to go and try to lynch him. That's, you know.
Well, you know, he also knits and spins.
I know
out
he
of self-defense, but he does. He does, you know, he's not as crazy about it as I am, but he has his own little stash. And
well,
he is working on one of my designs right now. He's working on a Chad sweater.
Yeah, but he's a teacher, and he knits in school too, doesn't he?
He does. So my husband has a little bit of ADD, and he found that when he was sitting in staff meetings, he would twitch, and he'd wriggle, and he'd start doodling things, and the next thing you know, half the conversation would go by, and he'd be like, "What? What just happened?" So he went to his principal and he said, "You know, I have ADD, and I find that when I knit, I listen better. Would it be okay for me to knit during staff meetings?" And she said, "Sure, why not?" And that has been a really good focusing practice for him. And there's some really great research about that kind of repetitive movement and attention disorders. Stephanie Pearl McPhee, the Yarn Harlot, talks about this a lot in some of her lectures. And I'm finding it really to be true. In fact, Kay used to teach knitting at her daughter's school when her daughter was in grade school. And there were kids there who had knitting built in as part of their IEP, their individual education plan, because it helps them focus when they were sitting there and trying to listen.
So you talked a minute ago that Kevin was working on one of your designs. You are a designer. I've seen your designs.
Yes.
They're beautiful. I've actually worn some of your stuff. But you don't do that much designing. Is that just the nature of having to wear too many hats?
That's a big part of it. Owning your own business means that you are chief cook and bottle washer. So when it comes to the shop, I'm helping customers, and I'm knitting shop samples, and I'm managing our customer database and our point-of-sale database. I do the accounting. I scrub the toilet. All of those things are part of my purview. And so I just don't get as much time to sit down and design as I would like. And I will admit, I'm a little bit selfish because I really like to knit for myself. And so I spend a lot of the time when I'm not in the shop actively doing the business stuff working on my own creative pursuits. But I do love the process, and it's really exciting to see one of your designs out there in the wild.
Well, you have great stuff. I've seen it. Of course, you and I work mostly together on your presence at Stitches West each year. We try to stay in touch, but it's that really which is the most of the business that we tend to do with each other. I'd like to talk to you about Pearl Essences and Stitches' relationship, if that's okay with you.
Absolutely.
Okay.
It's one of my favorite things.
It is mine, too. And this is, you know, I want to kind of use you to draw specific relief against other things that I have heard and other attitudes that other people have. I'd like to get into the hardest question right away. Yours is the closest local yarn store to really what is the largest knitting and crochet consumer show in the world, Stitches West, held every February in Santa Clara. When Stitches goes to some other cities, places, there are yarn stores there that treat Stitches as if it was a plague on their houses that was going to destroy their businesses, steal their customers, leave them bankrupted. And that's not how you treat us. And I happen to know it's not only does it not concern you, you actually look forward to the show every year. Such a between your outlook on this that I'd like you to kind of explain to us why. You know, what is it that you see that they don't?
Absolutely. Well, the first and foremost thing is that our attitude about Stitches and really any consumer show like that is that for us, it's not about selling product. I have a sunk cost there, the cost of my booth, the cost of my transportation to get there, if I decide to stay on site, all of those things. Those are sunk costs. Those all are marketing for me. Every time I go to a consumer show, it's an opportunity for me to interact with customers that might not necessarily walk in my brick-and-mortar shop. At a show like Stitches, which has draw from all over the country, you know, I know that there are people who come from far and wide to show up for West because it is the biggest, because it has the biggest marketplace. And so I get an opportunity to interact with those customers that I wouldn't have because odds are they're not going to make it to my shop. Second of all, it gives us an opportunity to do something different, to mix things up a little bit. You know, everyone has those days when they wake up and they're like, ugh, I'm not sure I want to go to work today. Stitches is an opportunity for us to break out of our shell a little bit. And one of the things that we do is we have a theme every single year. One year we decided that we were booth bunnies and we all wore rabbit ears on our heads. And that was how you could identify who was working in the booth. You just found the girl with the bunny ears. The year that Ravelry was there doing the passport thing, we had a passport princess, and whoever had the rubber stamp to fill out your little card was the passport princess. That was really awesome because we got the guys to wear the tiara too. The last couple of years, we've done a little bit of a steampunk thing. So we wear our hats and we wear our corsets and we wear big bustles and we get all dressed up, and it's like going to play. Plus, I mean, just the shopping is so remarkable. I get to see all kinds of stuff there that I don't get to see during the rest of the year, which is wonderful. And so because we go into it with this attitude of let's go have fun and let's go meet people and let's go make connections, it's never a lose for me. We've never had a year when we didn't make our show. Never, ever. And in fact, Stitches Weekend has turned into the biggest sales weekend I have all year long. So it's absolutely a win-win for me. Plus, you know, I mean, you get to meet people walking down the aisles. It's how I've gotten to know Melissa Liebman, and I just have the biggest knitter girl crush on her.
Well, I appreciate your perspective on that, and I know that you do smart things like have raffles and build your lists and things like that, so that I know that you're doing a lot of things all at once to make it take advantage of that. This year, you stayed at the hotel, even though you're local, so you could take advantage of all the evening activities. What did you do, and what was fun?
Well, this was the first year that we decided to stay on site, and we're really, really glad that we did because it gave us an opportunity to stay and play without having to worry about whether we'd had one too many in the bar with Shannon, Shannon Dunbaven from Cascade Yarns. And it also meant that we didn't have to go home and do the dishes and do the laundry and all of those other things, that we really could maintain that experience of being away at the show. And so we did everything this year. We sat in the audience for the fashion show and went to the fashion show dinner. We went to the student banquet and fashion show. We went to the pajama party, which was awesome, dancing around in our pajamas with Marley and Kristen and Shannon. And I won a prize with my sock monkey jammies. It was just a blast.
Who gave you your prize?
Oh, that was Debbie McComber.
Yep.
I felt like I was getting a prize from knitting royalty. It was just so cool. And she loved my sock monkeys.
Well, who doesn't like sock monkeys?
You know, my daughter picked those out for me, my five-year-old. So when I told her that I won a prize for the jammies that she bought for me, she was just so happy.
Well, good. That's good. So you had a good time, and you hadn't been to a fashion show in a couple of years.
No, I hadn't.
You always put something in the fashion show, but it's been a couple of years since you've been to the fashion show and watched your garment come out onto the stage on one of the models. Was that fun?
Oh, you know, there's nothing like seeing your design on somebody else's body. It's the coolest thing ever. And it takes on a different kind of life when you see it from a distance like that. One of the challenges as a designer is that you have those sort of designer blinders on, right? And you're so hyper-focused on making sure that the math is correct and making sure that the texture is correct. You see all of the little details, and often you don't see it from far away. And so to see it up on stage with the lights and with Rick giving his little spiel and having the models do pirouettes is just so gratifying. And we love
it. Well, you look good. Yeah, well, you look good on stage this year. I want to ask about an ongoing trend. Let's call it maybe not the best of habits in the world. Let's put it that way. You have a habit of basically finishing your garment for the fashion show, 30 or 40 seconds before it's actually due to be taken away and merchandised. And this year it got very scary for you.
Yes, it
did. So I think you would admit that, you know, you are one of those people that works best under pressure. But I think this time you got a little more pressure than you actually wanted. You want to tell our listeners the story?
Oh, yeah. This year we cut it really fine. It was a culmination of events that made for very sleepless nights for me. About 2 weeks before the show, we found out that the person who was going to knit the model for us wasn't able to do it. And because it was my design, then I got to knit a fingering weight houndstooth colorwork vest for the fashion show. And so I had been working on it diligently, oh so diligently, and it still wasn't fast enough. So we got to set up on Thursday morning, and I was still madly working on the vest. In fact, Kay looked at me and said, go check into the hotel room, go upstairs, and go knit. So I did. Usually every year it's me and Kay putting together the booth, and this year, fortunately, we had some wonderful volunteers who helped her put all that together so that I could knit. And so we opened for preview and did that, and we went to Laura Bryant's book signing, which was wonderful, and then I went back up to the room, and I knit, and I knit, and I knit, and I watched endless hours of Netflix while I knit. I slept for about 2 hours, woke up, and put my needles back in my hand, and knit, and knit, and knit, and then I was texting back and forth with Christy and saying, how long do I actually have? Can I make it? Can I make it? And finally, just at her drop dead, when I was sure that she was going to march up to my room and grab me by the throat, I sewed in the last end, and I handed it to Kevin, and I said, you need to take this to Christy, please, because I haven't had a shower yet, and I'm a mess. So we got it there just in the nick of time. I promise next year I will be more organized than that. In fact, I actually have my list of fashion show garments ready to start as soon as I have yarn from Cascade. As soon as their autumn yarns hit and I get my samples, we are casting those suckers on. Because I don't want to do that again. That was no fun.
Well, it was fun for me to watch because you were having those, you know, it really was kind of fun to watch. And even Christy was chuckling about it, too.
Christy's the best. We love her so much.
Yeah, for our listeners who don't know who Christy is, it's Christy Miller, who runs the market and takes care of all of the vendors at all of the shows. She's known on Facebook as Knitter's Brat, and you know, she's one of the nicest brats I know.
Me too. She's one of my faves.
Yep. So I want to just one last question before about the stitches itself. You take the whole weekend off to do the show. Your shop does, and you gear up and you do a lot of stuff. But you don't just take advantage of the show at the show. You start dealing with taking advantage of the show coming weeks beforehand. You have customer parties. You do kind of pre-marketing things. Can you kind of tell us about that philosophy and that strategy?
Sure. First and foremost, we recognize that we don't teach everything. And so we encourage our customers to go and take stitches classes. Besides, it's an opportunity to meet internationally known designers and teachers. And so we absolutely don't begrudge people going and getting more education. Please, go get more education. It's fantastic. So part of how we help them to do that is that we give them a little bit of a discount on their stitches supplies. So if they bring in their registration and supply list, we give them a little bit of a discount so that they come and buy their supplies from us.
Smart.
In addition to that, we get really excited. Well, we get really excited about a lot of things, but we get really excited about stitches in particular. And every year we have people who are stitches virgins who've never been there before. And they're like, what should I do? What should I expect? And so we have a list of things that people should do to prepare for stitches. First and foremost, figure out your budget in advance. if your budget's really tight, bring cash. And so we give them stitches strategies about how to shop, where to find what they're looking for so that they can make a targeted strike and make sure that they get to the stuff that's going to be the hottest before all of it's gone. And then we also talk to them about making sure that they take care of themselves across the stitches process, because when you walk in there, there's so much to look at. It's such a feast for the senses, and it can be a little bit overwhelming. And to try and figure out how to pare some of that down to get to what you really want can also be very overwhelming. Plus, it's a lot of people. It's a noisy environment, and everybody is all excited. It's got that festival atmosphere. And so we try to make sure that they know to eat well beforehand, because, you know, they shop better when they've been fed. And we often have amongst our volunteers a group that can sort of sweep up our community folks and make sure that they go and get a little bit of water and sit down and have some place to eat and have a place to chat. And, you know, we just treat it like it's a big extension of our family room. Everybody's welcome.
I think that's so smart, but I think it's smart that you make time to sit down with your customers and even have little get-togethers where you map out strategies for all this stuff. You know, it absolutely says, I'm not afraid of this, you know. And I actually happen to know that you're guilty of that, too. You map it out for yourself, because I think every year you do some damage yourself on the floor.
Well, you know, I'm very lucky because I get to go to Stitches Preview. And preview night is my favorite night, because there's obviously fewer people in the market, because it's only available to those who are taking the Stitches education. You have to be registered for a class to get into preview. And that means you get first pick. So there are a couple of places where I go right away to make sure that I get what I want. And there are a couple of vendors that I only see once a year when I'm at Stitches. So I make sure that I get what I need from them right away. And mostly it's the hand-painted stuff, because I'm just a sucker for color.
I know you are. I know you are. I've seen that about you. And your shop reflects that too. You know, you have a very colorful shop.
Yes, we are. in just about every possible way you can imagine.
Oh, and your yarns are colorful too, I was going to say. No.
You should hear us when the boxes of yarn come in. And it's so funny, because our UPS guy, Jean-Marie, is used to this now. The minute he walks in the door, he gets mobbed. And same thing with our UPS, or with our postal service guy, Ronnie. Everyone's like, what'd you bring me? What'd you bring me? What'd you bring me? And we have a term for what happens when we open those boxes.
Which is?
We call it a yarngasm. Because, you know, you slice open the box and you pull back the flaps, and everyone goes, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. It's so beautiful.
Oh, that's great. All right, let's move off of Stitches, except that just as a Stitches connection, I know that you and your partners do a great job of supporting causes and charities and drives. And this year at Stitches West, you met somebody new, somebody that's important to me, and you found a new cause. Can you please tell me about that meeting and what's led out of that meeting?
Absolutely. I had the great honor of meeting Pam Hashke of Halos of Hope, and I'm going to wave at the chat room and say, hey, Halo Prez. I was so touched by the stories from the great shearing, as we have come to call it, when you and Drew and Mark Maraca from Collage Yarns got your heads shaved last year. Oh, I wish I had been there. I'd have died to have been there. And we've been watching very carefully, because we do support a lot of charity knitting and crocheting projects. First and foremost, we work with the Linus Project, which provides for blankets for kids in need in lots of different ways. But a blanket's a lot of work. It's a lot of time. It's a lot of investment in materials. And So we were looking for something that was a little bit more manageable across a broader range of people. And so I stopped by the Halos of Hope booth, and I saw all the beautiful kits. And, of course, I'd seen across the whole weekend their kits in prize giveaways and things like that, and really cute little hats. And then I met Pam, who is just such a warm and wonderful and beautiful person, and she just oozes compassion. Just so wonderful and so warm and so welcoming. And so I talked to her about becoming a drop-off location for hats. And so we got all connected up that way. But then we came home from West and we were thinking, you know, okay, so now we've got this basket there that says, here's where you bring your hats for Halos of Hope. And we have a basket of yarn that people can use to knit hats. And that's all really wonderful. But we want to do something more. How do we do something more? And Halos of Hope is really special to me because they help people regardless of which type of cancer they have. They don't specialize in just breast cancer or just prostate cancer or just this or just that. They help everyone. They don't focus out a single group. They accept hats for men, for women, for children. And I don't know a single person out there who hasn't been affected by cancer in their lives. Not a single person. Whether they've experienced it themselves, whether a loved one or a dear friend has survived or passed as a result of cancer, it's such a universal thing. And one of the things that's really frustrating as a person watching someone go through that illness is that sense of helplessness that we have. And I know that when I'm feeling troubled, I turn to my crafting as solace. And because the process of working those stitches helps me work through my emotions. A couple of years ago, a very dear friend of mine called me up to say that his son had been diagnosed with a very aggressive form of cancer, and he was completely at a loss for what to do. And I looked at this family who was in such crisis, and they live very far away, back in Minnesota, and there was nothing I could do immediately to help. I couldn't help by bringing food. I couldn't go sit with them in the hospital, but what I could do was knit. And so I asked what Zach's favorite things were, and Pokemon and football were the thing. So I knit him a Minnesota Vikings hat in gold and purple, and I knit him a red and black and white Pokeball hat, and I sent them off because that was the thing that I could do. And it may seem like a little thing, but little things can mean a whole lot. I was so touched by Pam's story of walking into a cafe and seeing someone who was clearly undergoing chemotherapy and commenting on her hat and finding out that she'd gotten the hat through Halos of Hope. I mean, it's such a concrete thing that you can do to help a cancer patient maintain their dignity by having something soft and warm and wonderful and to know that there's someone out there that cares about their healing. So my partners and I looked at each other and we said, well, we should just make a really big deal out of this. Why don't we do a 24-hour Halos of Hope-a-thon? And we'll open the shop on a weekend for 24 hours. We'll have a great big pajama party because who doesn't love partying in their pajamas? And we will churn out as many hats as we possibly can. And we'll get them done in time to send off for Camp Happy Times, because Halos is running a big campaign now to do star-themed hats for Camp Happy Times. And so we thought, let's just do this up And so we're approaching yarn companies for donations of yarn and prizes. And we're inviting people from all over the place to come hang out and knit as many hats as we can. And we've just found out that it looks like we're going to get some really good media coverage locally as well. So we're very excited.
Well, that's fantastic. I wish so hard that I could be there.
I know. I keep trying to figure out how I can tempt you. We could throw a beer festival at the same time.
A beer festival, because Kevin went to see the beer festival. And if we could schedule those things back to back, probably I could get that done. So can we know the dates when this is happening?
Yes. Let me pull them up here. I believe it is on July 13th and 14th. And we will open at noon on Saturday and close again at noon on Sunday.
Beautiful. And beautiful. I hope you'll be posting and tweeting and Instagramming so we can keep track of you. Okay.
Yeah, and we're going to get big support from Cascade Yarns. Cascade Yarns is just so wonderful to us, and they're a big supporter of Halos of Hope as well. And any other yarn companies that want to jump on board and help us sponsor this thing, bring it on.
And, folks, I'll be having Nathaniel's contact information in the show notes, and we'll talk about that a little later on. Well, we're really blowing through here, Nathaniel, so I want to speed up a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
You and I have talked about starting out and starting new. What advice would you give to someone that was going to try to open a yarn shop or become a designer?
Well, first and foremost, you got to know your stuff. Get as much education, and I'm not talking formal education, get as much information and education as you possibly can. There is nothing like expertise for helping you feel confident and for helping others feel confident in you. Second, find yourself a mentor. Mentorship is easily available in this industry. And it's there pretty much just for the asking. And from my experience, people are very upfront about what kind of time they're willing and able to give you. But talking to someone who's been in the industry, who knows the ropes, is really invaluable. And I was very, very fortunate very early on to have wonderful mentorship from people like Tina Newton at Blue Moon Fiber Arts and Louise from Uncommon Threads in Los Altos, which is another local yarn shop here, as well as manufacturers' representatives, Marge Oakley, who was our Rowan representative, and Crystal Palace Yarns, and a whole bunch of other wonderful stuff, really took me under her wing and gave me some fantastic advice. She continues to be a very important influence for me. And it was really great because the first meeting we ever had, she invited me up to the warehouse up at Crystal Palace Yarns, and she and Susan Druding and I sat and we talked about yarn design and color design and just had a really wonderful connection, and they remain really close friends to this day.
Well, I think you're right on the money. Most people don't ask for help, and the nice thing about this industry is that it doesn't work like other people. You can ask for help on anything. I'm always surprised that people don't ask for help more.
Yeah, my experience is that people in the yarn world are extraordinarily generous. They're generous with their time, they're generous with their resources, and they just want to connect.
I absolutely agree. So before we get too far, I want to make sure that we give people your store location of Pure Lessons Yarn and your hours so that they can come and see you.
Sure. We are located at 564 South Murphy Avenue in Sunnyvale, California. We're really close access to both of the major freeways that run down the Bay Area. For those of you who don't know where Sunnyvale is, we are in the heart of Silicon Valley. So we're in between San Jose and San Francisco, a little closer to San Jose. If you're coming to visit, come into the San Jose airport. If you need a ride, give me a buzz. I live right around the corner. And we are open Tuesday through Saturday, 12 noon to 6 p.m., except for Thursday when we're open noon to 9 p.m. And you're always welcome to drop by and come do some stitching with us.
Thank you very much. So before we wrap this up, is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners, anything I didn't cover, and just anything in particular?
You know, I think it's really important for people to make something beautiful every day. Being an artist isn't about what you make. It's how you live your life. And every time you pick up your needles and string, you're making art. You can make art of your life as well, because there is very definitely an art to connecting with other people. And I invite you all to come and be a part of our community here, whether you can come and sit in our family room directly or just connect with us on Ravelry or Facebook. We welcome it.
Well, thank you again for joining us this morning, Nathania. I hope I can get out there to see you sometime before next February. It just seems too long between visits.
It is. It is. You're welcome anytime.
Oh, thank you.
And you can bring Christy with you.
Yeah, I could be. No, I'm not letting you and Christy alone. And I'm not. And I'm not chaperoning. Yes. No. That's not happening. I'm gonna have to bring David.
We have so much fun.
I know you do. Too much fun. We won't go there right now. We'll tell that story another time. All right. So, thanks, Nathania. That was my guest, Nathania Apple from Pearlescence Yarns in Sunnyvale, California. Make sure you keep up with Nathania and the Pearlescence Gang by visiting their website, pearlescenceyarns.com. That's one you're going to want to bookmark. Next week, I'll have Laura Bryant on the show. For those of you who don't know who Laura is, she is a designer. She is a magnificent artist. She is the owner of and creative force behind Prism Yarn and the author of many beautiful books, including her newest book from XRX Books, Artful Colors, Mindful Knits. She's also an incredibly wise woman who I have turned to many times, taking full advantage of her sage advice. I feel fortunate to be able to call her a friend. She has a lot to say about her process for dyeing yarn, designing, and the industry as a whole. This is a real insider in the industry, folks, and you're going to want to tune into this to the episode next week. If you missed any links that we've mentioned here today, please don't worry. You'll be able to find all the show notes for this episode at barbarahooligan.com. Just as soon as I get a chance to write them up and post them. Last week it took me a couple of days, so please be patient with me. I also want to make sure that you know that I'm eager to hear from you. You can email me questions, recommendations, critiques, and feedback to benjamin@fiberhooligan.com. I don't promise to respond to every email or message, but I do promise to do my best to read them all. And if you ask a really great question or have an inspired idea, or just because I'm feeling feisty, I may even read your email or message on the podcast. Well, that's our show, Fiber Hooligans. As we slide on out of here today, I'd like to wish you all a glorious week. Remember, the only thing better than being creative is being kind to each other. The good news, you can do both. Thank you for spending the time with me. I'll see you next week on another edition of Fiber Hooligans.